Skip Frank, Bob Wheel, and Jerry Lindgren. They'll be followed by David Berg, Mike Saba, and Florence Reinerman.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. You simply need to give us your first and last name, no address, and the clock in front of you will help you keep track of how much time you have left.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Skip Frank. I'm here on behalf of University Park Condominiums. We are located at 1500 Southwest Park Avenue. For those of you that are familiar with the neighborhood, that is the block that is just to the north of the former Lincoln High School, which is now Lincoln Hall at Portland State. To begin with, and it may surprise you, Commissioner Leonard, I agree with you, at least speaking for myself, that this program is an innovative and cutting-edge approach, and I'm not here to argue that condominium owners shouldn't be paying their fair share. The concern that I do have, and it is likewise a concern which I think you should share, is that although we are dealing with an innovative, cutting-edge idea, we are not dealing with an innovative, cutting-edge geographical model. And so what I'd like to speak to is the inequities created, especially as they relate to our complex, of the present mapping. It's my understanding that the mapping that occurred in this district occurred some 20 years ago, and I hope that's up somewhere so I can engage you folks to look at it. If it isn't, I'll try to verbally describe it. You have it. If you look where we are, you'll see that we are on the eastern edge of the South Park blocks, and the border of the district goes to the westerly edge. That means that everything on the other side of that border, on the westerly edge, which is described as Southwest 9th, is outside the district. It is our belief that if we can get everybody to share appropriately in the burdens that are imposed because of the park blocks. When I say spreading the burden, I mean all of those that benefit from its existence, those of us that live there and have our properties enhanced. I see my time is coming up. How is it
that you would respond to the obvious sort of rejoinder, and that is that there'll always be a line and there'll always be someone just over the line?
My response is that the line should be changed. That's your job.
But how do we ever fix a line when somebody can say on either side of the line, I'm just, you know, inside the line, and someone is just outside the line?
All right, Commissioner Adams, or Mayor Adams, I'm sorry. The problem is that the city has changed since that line was drawn. We now have.
I know that, but if we were to redraw it, and someone would say it should be drawn that much further out, how do we respond to that?
You would respond to it by saying the city has changed, that we have significantly added commercial elements that are now to the west of that line. That line was appropriate probably when drawn 20 years ago. I've lived here all my life, and I would have to agree that the line was appropriate 20 years ago. But since then, we have a new Safeway store, which contributes to the problem that we have in those areas. We have three convenience stores. We have coffee shops, bento shops, sandwich shops. We have a lot of commerce that is generated on that side of the lines, not to mention the fact that we have two brand new condominium projects that enjoy the park blocks as much as we do. The Elliott and the Benson are on that other side of that line, just barely. The apartment complex across the street from us, which is South Park Square, I believe, they're outside the line, but they're right on the park blocks. So basically, if this geographical division remains, we in effect are paying some $17,000 a year to clean up the neighborhood that they share in the enjoyment of, and that just isn't fair. How you address it is obviously something that's outside my personal expertise, but this whole thing was enacted by ordinance, and you're sitting today considering a new ordinance, I'm not here to tell you how to do your job or anything like that, but obviously, this ordinance that creates the mapping in the first place needs a serious look at.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you. I think you answered the question well. Sir?
I'm Bob Wheel. I am a condo owner at 1500 Southwest Park, up at the far end of the Business Improvement District. I'm here today to enthusiastically support what Mr. Frank has said. Excuse me. I would like to point out that if you walk this area right along the border, along the park division where the business district is set off, you will find the South Park, the Cumberland, the Gene Mayer, the West Park Place, the Onkford, and not go much further, and you'll find the Benson and the Elliott. There are hundreds of our neighbors and our friends who live there. And when they go out to recreate, they do not walk west to the freeway. They come east into the park blocks. They enjoy the benefits and the privileges of what the Business Improvement District provides. These are our neighbors and our friends. And we urgently suggest that if you do pass this ordinance, that you amend the district boundaries so that our neighbors and our friends will continue to enjoy the benefits and the privileges of the Business Improvement District, and they will also share in the costs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Gerard Lindgren. I also live at 1500 Southwest Park Avenue in downtown Portland in this condominium, which is targeted for this assessment. Directly across the street at 1511 Southwest Park Avenue, which is some 206 feet, or if you count it as seven elm trees away from our building, depending how you measure it, it's a 13-story apartment building with 191 units. They enjoy the same amenities as we do, but they are not being asked to pay this assessment. This is essentially what Mr. Frank and Mr. Wheel have said. Their building dwarfs ours. In addition, of course, there are the Elliott, the Benson, the Mosaic, the Museum Place, the condos above the Safeway store, and many others. The argument I want to reinforce is that the boundaries have almost been gerrymandered at the beginning, and they need to be adjusted. One possibility is to run them. A natural boundary would be Highway 405 on the west with the Willamette on the east. It would be a very natural type of boundary to suggest. On the second point, I'm 78 years old, retired, and living on a fixed income. I do not raise champagne glasses every night myself. And when my wife and I discussed how we were going to economize to fit the additional higher HOA fee, and she suggested that I stop eating breakfast. And I countered that maybe she should skip her breakfast. And this issue is not yet resolved.
Good luck with that.
Maybe you could each have a smaller breakfast.
Yeah. Now, I raise this in humor, perhaps, but it is a fact, and not a funny one, that a number of our residents are unemployed at the time right now. It's a hard time, and it's a rather awful time to be raising an additional barrier for them. And I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Question, how much would the additional, would the fee be for your particular unit?
We're told $17,000.
No, for the gentleman's
particular. As far as I can tell, it would be roughly $136 based on averages.
Thank you.
A year or a month?
Per year, okay. Over $11 a month.
Thank you.
It'd be about the cost of a breakfast each day, if you will.
Thanks. Carla?
The next three, please come on up, are David Berg, Mike Saba, and Florence Reinerman. And they will be followed by Campbell Richardson, Debbie Coleman, and Jerry Knopfman.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just need to only give us your first and last name, and you'll have 2 minutes.
Hi, I'm David Berge. I guess I'll scrap my 3 minutes and just address a couple of issues. One, I think the point that has just been raised about the boundary of the bid really, to me, points out the fact that when the bid was first created, it was to incorporate those areas of town which are primarily commercial. And I think the challenge I have with the way that the amendment is written is that, the quote is that the use of downtown property for owner-occupied dwelling purposes contributes to the downtown need for supplemental services load. And frankly, I would argue that actually the existence of condominium units with owner-occupied a presence actually diminishes this. Not only is it the fact that you have people who actually live here, who are here in the evenings, who actually frequent the businesses that are to be improved, we're not the ones that are creating the problems. I think where we've essentially gone off track is that originally it was designed. It didn't include the apartments. Yes, I understand that the apartments were brought in. The low-income ones do have a decreased amount that they're requested to put in. But I think the real issue is I'm not opposed to paying a share. I think the formula that is created for this doesn't take into consideration the benefits that condominiums provide. You take an area like the Pearl where you have a lot more condominium properties, they don't have the same issues that the downtown area has. The downtown area would be more vibrant if it had more condominiums, not less. And this seems to be suggesting that the condominiums and the owner-occupied dwellings is the problem. The other issue is that this is really an economic hardship at this time. A lot of condominiums are looking at thousands of dollars of losses due to foreclosures, and I realize my time's up, so I'll stop at this point.
Thank you for your testimony. Mike?
Good morning. It's still morning. Council and Mayor, my name is Mike Sabe. I'm a resident of the Portland Plaza condominiums for 21 years. I haven't spoken before council since I retired 5 years ago, so I'm a little rusty. Forgive me. But all I want to say is and emphasize that we are not against the business improvement district, but it is a business improvement district. Prior councils, when this was created, recognized that condominiums were a different animal, even from apartment buildings who are owned by investors. I do also want to point out that many of the low-income projects in the city, especially downtown and especially those owned by nonprofit corporations, enjoy a full property tax exemption. As you remember, I administer those programs. But I would point out that the residents of Portland Plaza contribute over $500,000 a year on that one block just in terms of property taxes. My property taxes are $3,800 per year based on the assessed value of my unit. We also assess ourselves $637 a month of non-tax deductible money to pay for the services that supplement what we feel are not supplied by the city, mainly block maintenance and security. If we were to cut down our assessment, we'd probably have to fire one or more shifts of security guards. That would not help the employment situation. The issue of equity is somewhat nuanced, and it cuts several ways. And I think you've heard some of those issues, and I think you've received written communication from many of my neighbors who could not appear today since we just heard about this ordinance last week. The first time we heard about it was in September of last year, where the very organization that would financially benefit presented the information to us, and that's the last we heard about it. They were polite enough to send us the ordinance, but in trying to explain to my neighbors what that ordinance meant, it was very difficult to do. I guess I'll leave it right there. If you have any questions, feel free.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Hi, I'm Florence Reinerman. I'm one of your imported from elsewhere people in Portland. I love this town. I'm an East Coast girl. I have never lived in a condo before in my life. I live at the Portland Plaza. I also do not sit up in the 26th floor and drink champagne. My husband is a retired midline college professor. I am a retired midline administrator. We are not rich, okay? As to this being $150 average, I'm an accountant by training. In the Plaza, it's $215 to $250 a year increase in our already large homeowner fees. Our homeowner fees include 24/7 security. They include cameras on the outside of our building. They include painting the outside of our building, de-graffitiing our building. They include the repair of the sidewalks, which somehow we own and don't own. They include keeping the shrubbery by your safe group. Clean and Safe came in and told us how to trim but down our shrubbery so we wouldn't be, we have a whole block, it's not all building. We wouldn't be a place where campers would want to spend the night. We spend approximately 20 to 25% any year, and I went back and looked at our budgets this morning, on keeping our building clean, safe, our property on the outside and on the inside, so that it is a desirable place to be. As Mike says, who do we fire to come up with this $21,000, I believe was the number that people quoted to us when they came to our meeting, with our three elevators, our block of property, and whatever the third thing was, to do something? Are they going to really keep it up the way we keep it up? I'm not against helping the homeless. Good grief. I'm not against employing people. I'm not against getting people off of the street. My goodness, we have people standing across the street singing in the bus stop again at 2 in the morning. They don't even sing on tune. I'm thinking about going out and giving them music lessons. But it's, you know, it's city living. I think this needs to be thought out. I like the idea of increasing the space. I mean, you're a city now. You're not just a little block or five blocks. You're a metropolitan area. You want people to be downtown. You want us walking those streets. You want us using your services. You want us going to the ballet and the opera and all the things that we try to figure out how to do. We're not all rich. I really resented that.
Thank you for your testimony, you and everyone else.
Well, if my quote's going to keep being repeated, I think it should be repeated accurately.
Right.
What I said was that this was in 2003 when the council exempted condo owners from paying for the light rail was a person living in the penthouse of the coin tower will stand out with their martini glass, not champagne glass, and toast the city council. So I was very careful.
Okay.
I'll drink to that.
And I said coin penthouse. So recognizing there are a lot of other income levels, I was very specific about who I was talking about.
Well, I looked at places in the coin tower and opted not to purchase there.
Not the penthouse.
Thank you very much.
I have a question for Mike, mm-hmm. partly because I want to say thank you for your work for the city, but also would your security staff, they would just patrol your place, right? They wouldn't be out.
We contract with Portland Security, who provide on-site 24-hour service and three shifts. When they go to lunch, Portland Security circles our block with another personnel.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And I have an excused absence that I have to leave for. This is the first hearing on both these items, so I'm going to turn it over to the President of the Council to facilitate from here. I appreciate everyone who's came here to testify on these issues.
Next three, Carla.
Next three, please, coming up are Campbell Richardson, Debbie Coleman, and Jerry Nothman. They will be followed by Richard Leonetti and David Regan.
Good morning. You each need to simply give your names, and then you have 3 minutes. Or two. What are we doing? 2 minutes? 2 minutes. 2 minutes. I'm sorry. 2 minutes.
I'm going to try to make it shorter since lunch hour is approaching, and I think the subject has been covered pretty well. I'm a resident. My name is Campbell Richardson, and I've lived in the Portland Plaza since 1980. President of the Homeowners Association. I'm currently chairman of the Budget and Finance Committee, but I'm not here officially on behalf of the Plaza. Seems to me this is boiling down to a question of fairness. The Plaza particularly is on the very edge of the current boundary. And we never see clean and safe people come by. They don't need to come by. We don't need their service. As has been said, we're already paying for it. I would certainly join Skip Frank and his group in their argument that the boundary ought to be looked at. The boundary currently doesn't make any sense at all. But the businesses are coming all over, and I think I certainly support what the BID does. You can't argue with it. And I think that this thing ought to be looked at not only from the standpoint of those of us that are in the boundary right now, but those that ought to be in the boundary. Anyway, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Debbie. My name is Debbie Coleman, and I'm a business owner of Smart Forest Ventures and Rainy Day Theatrical Productions here in downtown Portland. I'm also a resident for 16-plus years at the Fountain Plaza condos in Coin Center. And yes, I am rich, currently to the extent of paying $25,000 per year in property taxes. And with my latest appraisal, the market value is at least 40% under the true market value today, and the assessed value itself is slightly under, but I'm more than happy to pay that. The Business Improvement District is a wonderful concept. The work that Clean and Safe has done over the years is absolutely fabulous, the best of any city our size I've seen in the United States, and I've done business all over the United States. However, it does say Business Improvement District, and landlords and retail owners and other business owners, those are legitimate business expenses, and they get to deduct them. If anyone, you know, knows all the tax codes, those are legitimate business expenses, and they get to deduct them. Because this is called a fee rather than a tax, citizens who own property, either condos, and I assume, but I am clueless, that there may be some residences in the district, and anybody who owns a home would pay. Maybe there aren't any. I obviously work downtown. I play. I attend all kinds of arts and entertainment events, and I shop, and I see the value all the time. However, in 16 and a half years, I live here full time, I have only seen the Clean and Safe folks on my block two times. I constantly see the people employed by folks in our block out there cleaning and doing all the other activities related to Clean and Safe. So what I don't understand is the district. 1994, we're complaining about the computer-aided dispatch system that's 12 years old, and we don't think that the districting of 1994 is out of date. Since then, we've had tremendous sums of money put into the Pearl District, the Cultural District, the River District, and the University District. And it is absolutely unfair. In the United States of America, which is attempting to rebuild its constitution after, you know, 8-plus years of disgrace. So, you know, could we help it along a little bit here in Portland and get on the equity bandwagon and please relook at the district that's involved? And in terms of the assessment, I myself would be assessed approximately $1,250 per year, again, non-deductible. And I think that really creates a lot of bad will among rich citizens, frankly, like myself, who are more than happy to support and generously support social services, education, the arts, the police, everything in the city of Portland to make this the most wonderful place in the country to live. Thanks.
My name's Jerry Nathman. I'm president of the Fountain Plaza Homeowners Association. I don't live in the penthouse, Commissioner, but I do live in the coin tower. And unlike Debbie Coleman, I'm not filthy rich. I've got a two-page answer here to the question and answer session on your website, but obviously it takes 20 minutes or more to point out the inaccuracies of that website and all the questions and answers that you supposedly give there. But what I want to address, seeing that I'm going to tear this up because you won't allow me the time, the City Council, you're on very dangerous ground here, hauling in single-family dwellings by force into a business improvement district. Like Debbie, I pay real estate taxes. I only have one unit to her several. But for that one unit of less than 2,000 square feet, I pay $12,000 in property tax. I would think that would entitle the resident of that unit to police protection in downtown Portland without having to pay additional sums to go out and rent a rent-a-cop. The logic of that escapes me. I've been on the Clean and Safe Board for 8 years. I've attended every board meeting they've had for over 13 years, and unlike Commissioner Leonard's statement that it was a council-induced requirement or suggestion to make it voluntary, the voluntary arrangement was worked out and suggested by me and the then president of Clean and Safe, Kevin Montgomery Smith. So I take full credit for that. Thank you. Fountain Plaza, in the intervening years, has made every payment that we have been invoiced for, have contributed thousands of additional dollars from private funding in the condominium, and I'm a great believer and one of the great advocates of Clean and Safe. But like many other worthwhile projects and organizations in downtown Portland, it has to stand on its merit for contributions. I contribute thousands of dollars to Central City Concern, the Burnside, Burnside Project and other things, to the Portland Symphony, to Portland State. That's not the issue. We are not bad guys. It's a question of making this. If any one of these organizations came to me with a gun in my head and said, hey, you have to contribute, I tell them to go to hell. And I can assure you that Clean and Safe will never get a dime from me other than voluntarily.
Thank you very much for
your time.
Mr. Nothman, if you would send your comments to us. This is a first reading. We won't be making our decision until next week, so I will read it if you would send me your information.
Yes, I'll be very happy to do that if you're really interested.
Thank you very much. I am.
Thank you. Carla?
Thank you.
The last two who signed up are Richard Leonetti and David Regan.
How did these
get distributed to them? Do you want to testify? Go ahead. Just pull up a chair. Good nearly afternoon, still morning. You need only give your names, and you each have 2 minutes.
I'd like to take three, if I might. My name is Richard Leonetti. I'm the treasurer of the Fountain Plaza Condominiums. You are proposing to extend the business improvement tax to our private homes, even though we're not a business. You should know that the Fountain Plaza has been voluntarily contributing $115 per unit year after year because we feel some of the clean and safe things you do were worthwhile. But we have been contributing, contrary to what you've heard here. I looked at the last 8 years as a contribution in every single year. And it's exactly the amount we were billed, and it averages $115 a unit. Fundamentally, this tax is unfair, and let me give you some examples of how it does not consider building values and number of individuals using the building that is claimed on the website. That's not true. The values used relate to 1993 and 1994. Any building upgraded since then does not pay more because of the upgrade. If I buy a slum building that was a complete wreck of little value back in the 1990s, I could renovate that building into the most gorgeous condominiums in the world, and I would pay virtually nothing under this tax. And if you built one right next door to me, brand new, you would pay hundreds of times more for exactly the same building. This thing relates to values established 15 years ago. They don't relate to today. And there is no bringing forward. It has nothing to do with value or people. I don't think that'd be fair for you to own a building next door to mine and pay hundreds of times more than my slum one that was renovated. Or let's consider a real case of Macy's downtown store. Their employment runs from 150 to 400, depending on the season. They see thousands of customers each day. Their people count and their value far exceeds our condo numbers. And yet, their tax under this is $24,000, and the proposed tax on our condominiums, our 44 lousy condominiums, is $30,000. Doesn't strike me as fair. Another comparison would be the Marriott Hotel on NATO Parkway. They've got 504 rooms, thousands of square feet of meeting space, restaurants, underground parking. They pay $54,000. How does that compare to 44 units paying $30,000? In my handout, there's a table. You can see what the individual condominiums would compare under this proposal. Compare the $675 we're asked to pay to the $242 amount the similar Portland Plaza would pay. Also look at the Portland Center apartments. Those are high-rise buildings on Harrison Street, where there's $61 and $74 per unit tax. These amounts have no relation to values or people either. My suggestion is that you do not enact the statute in the form it is because it's so unfair. You should also invest some work in rewriting this whole section of the city code under special taxes, since the same inconsistencies exist between the real businesses who are paying most of the taxes. We would consider continuing to pay a reasonable flat fee per unit if it was applied evenly to all the condominiums. You still have the problem issue raised by several owners that any imposition on a home would be illegal under the Oregon Constitution. You have a letter on that from one of our owners.
So you're into your fourth minute.
Pardon me?
You are into your fourth minute.
Okay. My thought is that a modest, evenly applied flat fee on condominiums might avoid conflict over this point. I've contradicted several things you heard from the Alliance. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Go ahead. Go ahead. What, sir?
Me?
Yes.
David Regan. Clean Safe, not everybody who has spoken out against SITLI, which I have, as you know, thinks that Clean Safe is all bad. I don't. I think that there's some great things happening. The gentleman from Central City Concerns told about the program to get for a recovery program and employment. This is the right idea. Let me suggest to you that what you've created downtown with Clean Safe is an enclave. Chronic homelessness is on the rise across the United States, and migratory homelessness, which is a little more frightening, is on the rise across the United States, and this will continue. If you don't believe me, I'll just keep bothering you for a year until the statistics bear it out. What you've created with Clean Safe Downtown is an enclave, and you can feel safe there, and you don't have to worry as much about people singing in the bus stops, and you don't have to worry as much about what kind of drug deals are going on in the convenience store while people are toasting with their martinis or their beers or whatever. But until you create jobs, you will not solve this problem, and the city will remain. I wouldn't care if about SITLI as much if people had a place to actually go. So you know, I come in here wearing two hats. One hat, I'm trying to be the nice guy and make you love me. I love you guys. I've looked at your resumes and your programs, and I love this. Portland's great. This is a wonderfully open forum, and I like each of you. But let me suggest that unless you focus on jobs, you will not solve these problems. The other hat I'm wearing is about tent cities, and that is abrasive, and you don't like to hear that, and I understand it. But it's already in the law, I believe. Isn't it true that somewhere in the law it says that you can create a second tent city right away, and you have the power to create many, and you can put them in places where nobody will mind it. It's far away from their backyard, within walking distance of mass transit. And that's only a first step. You've got to give people the dignity of a full night's rest in order for them to go out and look for jobs that aren't there. Green work for homeless. Therapeutic gardening communities. Just one idea. Also brownfield remediation and all kinds of things that have been discussed in a lot of the books that are out. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan?
Good morning, Commissioner Leonard and other commissioners. This is what I came here to testify about today, and I'm still waiting for the item to come up on the agenda, but I'm glad I have a chance to talk about this. I'm Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch, And the issue that's not being talked about is, although this last gentleman touched on it, is this whole question of the use of this private tax for private security and the enforcement of sit lai, among other anti-poor person laws. And one of the issues that was raised is that there are 16 armed security guards being paid for out of this private tax for the downtown people. And these security guards are armed. They're mostly retired Portland police officers, and there is no oversight for them except for a private corporation that hires them, that employs them. And the city is helping to foster this. And one day there will be a shooting by one of these security guards, and then we will have no means to hold that security guard accountable because they are a private police officer. In terms of creating jobs, we seem to be creating jobs for these retired Portland police officers who are already collecting pension instead of creating new jobs for people, as this other gentleman mentioned. And we've asked the question before at Portland Cop Watch, if we had enough money, could we buy our own police officer? Can we have them enforce the laws that we think are important? It just seems like what we're leaning towards is that this futuristic scenario that people write about in science fiction all the time, where corporations get to decide what goes on, who does what, and who the police are and what they do. And they're not writing about that because it's a vision that they enjoy. They're writing about it as a warning that this is not the kind of society we want to go toward. So I'm not really going to weigh in on whether or not the condo should pay toward the BID. What I'm talking about is looking at the whole program, and even though it may be cutting edge, be cautious about what you're doing, giving away what should be public oversight of law enforcement to private interests.
Thank you.
I beg the council for 10 more seconds. Can you grant it, Mr. Leonard?
Go ahead.
Ms. Martin from PBA suggested that chronic crime was down 81%. I don't know if the BOAC system is up well enough for you, Mr. Saltzman, to go ahead and talk with Clackamas or any of the surrounding counties, but that crime has just moved to Gresham is all. That crime hasn't gone away. You've created an enclave in Safe Clean, and until you create jobs, you'll just have to keep having these struggles about where to draw the line and who to tax to pay for the... Good. We should have recovery programs, but you can combine these things. Okay, sorry.
That's it. I would just say that statistic specifically is on the recidivism rate, so it is not displaced crime.
I don't believe that's correct. Is it, Ms. Martin?
I believe it's the recidivism.
The way she said it. Recidivism, she said, was down 30% or something like
that. That is the crime rate that's down 30%. The recidivism rate of the top 400 offenders is down.
Maybe I may have quoted the wrong person. My point is that crime is not down as much as you think it is. It's just moved to the outskirts of your city, sir.
I want it to be. It won't be, but the stats show that it is. Thanks. Anybody else want to testify? Council discussion.
I guess I have a question, and that's...
Who is that of? Do you want me to bring
it? Well, I guess Mike. It might be Mike.
Mike, Ty.
Maybe
Ty.
Shane. And I guess it's also a question for my colleagues, but okay, the obvious question, why don't we consider, why haven't the boundaries changed since 1988? What would be the downside of making I-405 and the river the boundaries?
The primary reason why the boundaries have not changed is because if the boundaries were to be changed and the condos weren't paying into the district, then there would be a diffusion of the services in the district. In other words, the security and cleaning would be required to go to 405, but if they're not capturing revenue to support that, it would actually make the BID as it currently stands less safe and less clean. Obviously, if the condos come into the system and are paying their share or would pay their share if they were in the outlying areas, that would change the discussion, I think, significantly. Under the current
city, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we have the ability as a city council to do that. Right.
Yes. Under the current city code, the way it's written is that the 2/3 of the property owners in the area that would like to join the BID have to vote.
Council
could change the entire legislation, but
because we're not giving the owners that are potentially affected here the opportunity to vote, right? The 2/3 rule doesn't apply to the ordinance.
No, because they're inside the BID.
Yeah. Okay.
Their property is already inside the district, and this is just how the city code is written. So if 2/3 of those outside the BID wanted to join, they would vote, the bid board would vote to approve it, and then it would come to council to add that new area to the B I
council could also amend this ordinance to make the boundaries 405 and the Willamette River. You could.
Just want
to
make
fine, which is fine, but is unrelated to this discussion. You understand? It's a completely separate issue. Then this discussion is as to whether or not it is appropriate to continue not having Connell's order owners participate. To expand the discussion is an appropriate discussion, or to expand the boundaries is an appropriate discussion, but really unrelated to this. But certainly,
they're not totally unrelated, but maybe technically unrelated to what we're considering right now. But I think
as a
policy matter, I think it's not unrelated.
I just wanted to make one clarification that in terms of the discussion about the park blocks and so forth, the bid provides no services outside of its boundary. So there's no benefit to folks, you know, across the street. The boundary in terms of the park block specifically, the boundary is on the condo side of the park block. So we don't patrol, the bid does not pay for patrols in the park.
Well, I think the point in the map show places that have been built since 1988.
No, I just wanted to be clear on that issue.
The Mosaic, I believe, is what it's called. And then, you know, the Pearl west of 11th Avenue, there's certainly a lot of new condos that I think benefit from the services, one way or the other.
And they do. I mean, as you know, the discussion up to now has been the condo owners don't think they should pay. Today, the argument was, well, if we pay somebody, they should pay across the street, too, which is a different argument. So we need to resolve this issue first as to who pays.
And you should also remember that the current property owners, if one-third plus one were to vote to dissolve the BID, they could do that. So it's in existence because the property owners agree to pay the fee and agree to be part of the business improvement district. So if you were to expand to 405 and say the revenue that would come in might be $100,000, but the cost to provide security and cleaning would be $900,000, for instance, that would certainly be something that the current property owners would weigh in terms of continuing the BID after 2011 when it's set to expire.
So the current BID expires in?
It's set for renewal in 2011. It's every 10 years.
And just my final question then was, has it ever been looked at? I mean, has the Portland Business Alliance or city ever looked at what would be the cost of providing clean and safe services in the 405 loop?
No, we haven't looked at that.
$900,000 to come up with is just a hypothetical number, purely.
Correct. It's a hypothetical number. I couldn't tell you the exact, but I know that the Pearl has approached me in the past, as has South Waterfront, to join the BID. But of course, both of those are condo heavy, and very little business support would be paid in for the BID fee, and so it hasn't been feasible. The board has considered it, but absent the condo presence, it probably would not pencil out. It would extract resources from the current BID.
And then I guess this is my last question, sorry, for Shane. I mean, the process by which we would actually draw new borders
just for be a code a new change. BID is it would just be a code change. I mean, the borders are defined by city code, and they could be changed by the council as well. The 33% that Mike mentioned, 33% of the revenues generated, whoever is paying it, they can vote and have it dissolved. It doesn't require 33% to petition to get one. It's nice to have that support before you expand the boundaries, but the city council can expand the boundaries without any property owner's agreement, of course.
Correct.
But I would be concerned if we unilaterally decided on our own to expand the boundaries without taking advantage of the board that's made up of people that live and work there, and they do a more thoughtful approach than us just from up here deciding. Because some people today think that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree. I wouldn't propose that as an amendment, but I guess it may be an option we would consider.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. This is a first reading, so we get a chance to absorb a lot of information. And because of the time, I wonder if I could just pose a couple of questions and get something and some feedback between now and the second reading. First has to do with Leonetti? His testimony and just the range of cost to different condo owners. If I could just get a response to his chart, there's a lot of information on it. I'd just like something on that. The Q&A has a description of the difference between a flat fee versus this approach. And if I could have just a little more clarification as to why you believe this is the better approach. I think I understand the argument, but I could just use a little more. Mm-hmm. And the third, Debbie Coleman raised a question, and it just may be that I'm thick today, but she raised a question about the tax consequences of a fee like this on different kinds of property owners, someone with a with a rental apartment versus a condominium owner. A condominium owner, I've never had a condominium, but my understanding is you have both an association fees, you pay fees to an association, plus you're like a homeowner, you pay your property taxes. And I would just like to know, just like a response to the question that she posed as to whether in characterizing this as a fee, does it have differential tax consequences depending on who the status of the property owner? I'm just interested. I mean, it seems like it.
Well, that's an argument that's come up a lot. They can respond to that. The short answer is yes, it does. But that's a quarrel one would have with the tax code and not the bid.
And if I could, just to be clear, Commissioner Fish, this is a property management license fee. The property manager pays this. That may be that increases the homeowners association fees because either they're doing the property management or they're hiring someone to do it, which is probably passed upon to the homeowners. But the individual condo owner is not paying this fee. It's paid at the higher entity level. Now, I mean, from a legal standpoint, that doesn't mean that they're not paying more in homeowner association fees overall. So the tax consequences for that particular owner isn't going to change if they're paying, I don't know what they're paying, but if they're paying $1,000 for their homeowner association fees and next year it's going to be $1,100, that's a $100 increase on their homeowner fees, and whatever that tax liability is what it is, and I don't know if they can deduct that or not.
I'm not trying to reopen an old wound, and I'm literally asking this because I don't, as I sit here, I don't understand the different tax consequences to different classes of owners, and I just between now and next week, I'd like to be informed on that.
Okay. Further question, Commissioner.
I like Commissioner Fish would just like you to get back to me with the answers to some to these questions regarding the legal issues on the use of the fee on properties. It's not supposed to be allowed as a direct consequence of ownership. So I would want to know: is this effectively a tax on the property versus a business expense, and what the city attorney thinks about that? I had correspondence from the Harrison East and West condominiums concerned about the formula and their lack of input into the formula, and I do think we need to have a discussion about whether things have changed in the last 15 years and whether there should be more input on that, because mostly I didn't hear anybody, well, maybe one person today saying that they shouldn't pay the fee at all, but more concern about equity and the particular assessments. We had a letter from Earl Childs concerning a differential rate for affordable housing. And so doing a different rate for condominium owners would not create a precedent. So I'm concerned about that. I was also interested in the testimony that talked about payment of property taxes and how much that and the different levels of payments of property taxes based on tax abatement in some buildings and not in some other buildings, and whether that needs to be considered into whether the residents of those buildings are already paying into the system as a whole, whether there should be some consideration of that in determining what the specific fees are. But I was encouraged to hear that very few people have said we shouldn't pay it at all. There's a question of the equity and the formula and who would be the appeal. That's I guess my final question is, if the district doesn't agree, if the property doesn't agree with how the fee is assessed, then who's their appeal to and what's the composition of that appeal body? Do they have a likelihood of success or not?
Other comments? No, you may not. No, you may not.
Send it in writing, please. I'll be happy to read everything that you send in.
No, you may not. Thank you. Carla? Read we have, I guess we'll do the last ordinance and then we'll go back to the consent items that were pulled.
814. Authorize a contract for Columbia South Shore Wellfield Improvement.
We have somebody from the Water Bureau. Morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Stan Vandenberg. I'm a principal engineer with the Water Bureau. What you have before you is an authorization for contract for the South Shore Wellfield Improvement Project. Funding for this project is under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, administered through the Safe Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund Program. We have just recently been notified that we are the recipients and have been granted this project to be funded under this program. It's a combination loan grant program. The amount is $1.3 million. 50% of it will be a grant. 50% will be a loan at 3% over 20 years. And there'll be approximately 14 jobs created by this program. And what we're doing is we're putting this forward as an emergency ordinance. The reason for is to comply with the requirements of the program. What we have is a requirement to begin construction by February 2010 and completion by February 2011. We will be coming back to council with a formal agreement. We're still working out the details. We're still getting the details from the state revolving fund on the program itself. But this puts into motion the project to move forward into a construction project to get that work done.
Thank you, Stan. Questions? Mr. Fritz.
So I heard you say that we got all of the money as a 50% grant and 50% loan from the American Recovery.
It's funded at $1.3 million. That's what we anticipate the contract to be. 50% of it will be a grant. 50% of it will be a loan at 3% over 20 years.
And all of that comes from the Federal American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And what is our financing plan for paying back the part that's the loan? How does that get done?
Well, what we're getting is 50% of this project offset over the capital improvement program that we have, that we had anticipated doing under the capital improvement program. We submitted it as part of that package. We're just fortunate enough that they're willing to buy this project, so to speak, and grant it as part of this program to move it ahead. We had originally anticipated this being a three-year contract to do this project over a period of time. We'll expedite the project to meet the requirements that they have for the program to deliver this project in a year's time.
So is there any money now going to be coming out of the 9-10 budget on this?
The payback of the loan, which will be rolled into the rates that we have and the budgets that we have.
Is that included in the rates that we set, or is there going to be savings over the rates that we
set? My understanding would be there would be savings on the rates, but I'm not an expert into that. I mean, right now, the way the budget was presented, I think it was anticipated being this three-year project that we would pay for.
Right. So now it's super that we got this federal grant.
Pardon me?
It's really great that we have a federal grant.
It's absolutely fantastic.
And since it was in the budget, I would think that next year we'd see that would be spelled out somewhere in the Water Bureau budget when we're looking at the rates for next year.
It'll be something small.
Thank you.
Further questions? Carla, please call the roll on 8410. Does anybody want to testify? Nobody wants to testify. Call the roll on 8410.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye. So we'll go to the three items pulled from consent. 797. Thank you.
Item 797. Okay. Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County not to exceed $124,764 to provide three residential treatment beds for individuals identified by the service coordination team as chronic arrestees with primary addiction issues who have the greatest need for and demonstrate the most potential benefit from an inpatient drug and alcohol treatment regime.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe this item was pulled by Dan Handelman, but as the title implies, this is money to pay for three residential beds for inpatient drug and alcohol treatment used by the service coordination team. It's a highly part, highly indispensable part, I think, of the success, overall success of service coordination teams.
Dan?
Good morning again. I am still Dan Handelman with Port and Copwatch. And a few weeks ago, I came to testify about the $500,000 you put into the service coordination team bill for this past fiscal year, or current one, I suppose. And now another $125,000 is being approved to pay for these beds. And nobody's against treatment programs that I know of. I think everybody thinks there should be treatment programs for people who need it and want it. But I think what the issue I raised last time is that, first of all, this shouldn't be on the consent agenda because it's a controversial program. The service coordination team keeps a secret list of people who are arrested over and over and over again by the police at their own discretion with little to no judicial oversight. The person who raised this issue in court recently was Eldon Rosenthal. This is an attorney who went to bat to take down the Aryan Nations after Mulugeta Sarraw was beaten and killed, and he defended Brandon Mayfield when the federal government wrongly accused him of being a terrorist who bombed a train in Spain. Eldon Rosenthal doesn't take things on lightly. I'm sure he would not be taking on this program if he thought that it was just a peachy thing. So I'm hoping you'll take another look at this whole service coordination team question. It's not clear to me, you know, we're a volunteer group that has a lot of other stuff we're trying to look at, their police review board, police conduct, train people on their rights. We don't have time to scour your budget. I don't know if you have approved money for this current, this upcoming fiscal year. It'd be nice to hear from council if you're planning to continue the service coordination team with a program, which, as I said, is controversial and has had a court ruling that was a mixed bag about whether or not the police can continue to keep the secret list. And I understand you're just paying a bill, but I really feel like this is something that we should have a public discussion about, and I certainly learned from last time that I don't get the last word here, and this is not the greatest place to have a discussion like this, but I would like to really encourage the council to discuss these issues like the sit-lie law and like this on the regular agenda and continue to look at the questions that we've been raising here, and Port and Copwatch is not alone in raising them. And I mentioned before, too, that the public defenders should be involved if this is going to continue. They should be involved in selecting who can go to treatment. And they've been saying, why should my client have to be arrested over and over and over again to get the treatment bed that they want when they want to do it on their first arrest instead of having to be arrested 100 times or whatever.
Commissioner Leonard?
Yes.
Just two quick points, sir. First is I had the pleasure of touring the residential treatment facility and met with a number of the, quote, chronic arrestees who told me that this was the single most important program in their lives in terms of turning around lives of addiction and crime to a path to self-sufficiency. And they were the most eloquent proponents of this particular program. And second, and Dan, I just want to make sure the record's clear. Either I read this or Mr. Rosenthal told me this, that in the course of the litigation, the list was actually disclosed. Is that correct?
I think somebody had a copy of it.
My question was, and during the course, it was disclosed, correct?
I don't know the answer to that.
I believe the press account said that, and I believe the lawyer confirmed that. So I just want to be clear. There's a list. I don't believe it's secret anymore. I think it was published in the course of the litigation. But I also respect your point about items that are on the consent agenda versus the regular agenda, and that's why we give citizens the right to move them forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fritz?
I have a question, and I can get the answer later. Are these extra beds, or are they assignment? Are we paying for the existing capacity? Do we know if this actually funds three extra beds somewhere?
These are paying for three current beds that we have with the county.
Is it? Like, I used to work on a 20-bed unit at OHSU, and there were two of those beds that at one point were assigned to a particular company so that we couldn't fill those beds with somebody else. Is this 3 of 20, or does it add 3 to make it 23 in a similar kind of unit?
I believe it's adding 3 additional beds.
And
Mr. Leonard may know better than I am.
To be really clear, this, strictly speaking, Dan, isn't the program you're addressing. This is a particular contract with the Volunteers of America that we established to take clients of Volunteers of America who have had a history of actually violent criminal activities, and as part of their treatment program, they agree to go to these treatment beds. So they, strictly speaking, aren't the people you're talking about that get arrested as a result of this list and then are told you either go to jail or go to treatment. These folks come from a, although a criminal background, actually a more severe criminal background.